ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Text 31, very beautiful verse. Patnya patim prosha grahanupagatam.
Patnya patim prosha grahanupagatam.
Nilokya sanjata mano mahotsava. Utasur arat sahrasa nashash. Shas nashayat
nashayat
sakam ratayar vridate lochana nana patnya patim prosya grahanupagatam Vilokya sanjata mano mahotsavaha Utashtur arat sarasasa nashayat Sakam ratayar vidita lochananana Patnya patim prosya grahanupagatam Vilokya sanjata mano mahotsavaha Utashtur arat sarasasa nashayat Sakam ratayar vidita lochana nana Patnyaha
The ladies
wives of Lord Sri Krishna
Patim
husband
Prosya
who was away from home
Griha anupagatam
Now returned home.
Vilokya,
thus seeing.
Sanjata,
having developed.
Mana
Mahautsava,
a sense of joyful ceremony
within the mind.
Utastuhu,
got up.
Arat,
from a distance.
Sahasa,
all of a sudden.
Asana,
from the seats.
Ashayat,
from the state of meditation.
Sakam,
along with.
Vratrai,
the vow.
Vridita,
looking coyly,
Bochana,
eyes,
Anana,
with such faces.
Very beautiful verse.
The queens of Lord Sri Krishna rejoiced within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations, as was socially customary. They covered their faces shyly and looked about coyly. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. As mentioned above, the Lord entered his home palaces occupied by 16,108 queens. This means that the Lord at once expanded himself in as many plenary expansions as there were queens and palaces and enter into each and every one of them simultaneously and separately. Here is another manifestation of the feature of his internal potency. He can expand himself in as many forms of spiritual identity as he desires, even though he is one without a second. It is confirmed by the Shruti mantra that the Absolute is one alone, and yet he becomes many as soon as he so desires. These manifold expansions of the Supreme Lord are manifested as plenary and secondary expansions, separated expansions. These separated expansions are representations of his energy, and the plenary portions are manifestations of his personality. Thus, the personality of Godhead manifested himself in 16,108 plenary expansions and simultaneously entered into each and every one of the palaces of the queens. This is called Vaibhav, or the transcendental potency of the Lord. And because he can do so, he is also known as Yogeshwara. Ordinarily, a yogi or mystic being, living being, is able to expand himself at most tenfold expansions of his body, but the Lord can do so to the extent of as many thousands or infinitely as he likes. Unbelievers become astonished to learn that Lord Krishna married more than 16,000 queens, because they think of Lord Krishna as one of them and measure the potency of the Lord by their own limited potency. One should know, therefore, that the Lord is never on the level of the living beings, who are but expansions of his marginal potency, and one should never equalize the potent and the potency. Although there is very little difference of quality between the potent and the potency, the queens were also expansions of his internal potency, and thus the potent and potencies are perpetually exchanging transcendental pleasures known as pastimes of the Lord. One should not, therefore, become astonished to learn that the Lord married so many wives. On the contrary, one should affirm that even if the Lord marries 16,000 million wives, he is not completely manifesting his unlimited and inexhaustible potency. He married, in italics, only 16,000 wives, and entered into each and every one of the different palaces, just to impress in the history of the human beings on the surface of the earth that the Lord is never equal to or less than any human being, however powerful he may be. No one, therefore, is either equal to or greater than the Lord. The Lord is always greater in all respects. Quote, God is great, unquote, is an eternal truth. And another long paragraph to finish the purport. Therefore, as soon as the queen saw from a distance their husband, who was away from home for long periods due to the battle of Kurukshetra, they all arose from the slumber of meditation and prepared to receive their most beloved. According to Yajnavalkya's religious injunctions, a woman whose husband is away from home should not take part in any social functions, should not decorate her body, and should not laugh, and should not go to any relative's home in any circumstance. This is the vow of the ladies whose husbands are away from home. At the same time, it is also enjoined that a wife should never present herself before the husband in an unclean state. She must decorate herself with ornaments
and good dress and should always be present before the husband in a happy and joyous mood. The queens of Lord Krishna were all in meditation, thinking of the Lord's absence, and were always meditating upon Him. The Lord's devotees cannot live for a moment without meditating on the Lord, and what to speak of the queens, who are all goddesses of fortune incarnated as queens in the pastimes of the Lord at Dwarka. They can never be separated from the Lord, either by presence or by trance. The gopis of Vrindavan could not forget the Lord when the Lord was away in the forest, cowherding. When the Lord, boy Krishna, was absent from the village, the gopis at home used to worry about Him traversing the rough ground with His soft lotus feet. By thinking thus, they were sometimes overwhelmed in trance and mortified in the heart. Such is the condition of the pure associates of the Lord. They are always in trance, and so the queens were also in trance during the absence of the Lord. Presently, having seen the Lord from a distance, they at once gave up all their engagements, including the vows of women described above. According to Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, there was a regular psychological reaction on the occasion. First of all, rising from their seats. Although they wanted to see their husband, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. But due to strong ecstasy, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord, and this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all stumbling blocks in the path of meeting the Lord, and that is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. Such a beautiful purport. Patnyapatim prosha grahanu pagatam vilokya sanjata mano mahotsavaha utastur arat sarasano nashayat sakam vritayar vridita lochananana. Even sounds nice. The queens of Lord Sri Krishna rejoiced within their minds to see their husband home after a long period abroad. The queens got up at once from their seats and meditations, as was socially customary. They covered their faces shyly and looked about coyly. So the scene is the absence, the long absence of Krishna, their husband, from Dwarka, had placed his queens in a state of like social dormancy and external neutrality, but internal intense absorption in feelings of separation from the Lord. And so we're hearing in the purport that they observed the customs of not doing this and not doing that and not doing this and not doing that. Because why would they do this or do that in any case? Because they're fully attached to Krishna. They wouldn't want to go somewhere for some social something so they could have some fun and whatever, dress themselves. They've got all this opulence, and they had no interest in doing any of that.
because to do any of that was just for the pleasure of Krishna, and Krishna was absent. So not just, the point is, not just by social convention, but by ecstatic emotion. They were controlled by their own ecstatic emotions. We'll say the same thing slightly differently. Social convention is just like to help us get there. Like, you know, learning to ride a bicycle with little training wheels on the bicycle. You don't have to learn to ride a bicycle with training wheels, but sometimes they do that with kids so they don't spill. They just can stay on the bicycle, and if they lose control, they don't fall. Social convention, although practically speaking, such social convention is absent. Whatever vestiges are remaining, it's fast deteriorating. But practically gone. Just a couple of considerations. In Houston, just before coming here, we were reading from the Bhagavatam where Kashyapa is addressing Diti. Diti has this desire for union with her husband at an inauspicious time. And she's really into it. And Kashyapa is not at all into it because he's a very sense-controlled person. So rather than like just blasting his wife, he starts glorifying the position of a chaste wife. Chaste wife is like a fort, the commander of the fort that will protect the individual in the fort from onslaughts of uncontrolled senses, because the wife is this very pious wife, is this great asset for a husband. And he refers to the pious wife who assists the husband in his religious duties as the better half of the body of the husband. So just a little social comment is we still have that expression in America today, but it's said in kind of a passing remark, in a joking manner. The husband may say and refer to his wife in some conversation as my better half or my other half. But common is the better half. You've heard that before, right, Chakri? My better, it's a nice idea that you're suggesting. I want to ask my better half. So there's absolutely no idea of the root of the religious message behind that statement. Bhagavatam is giving us that message. The wife, in relation to the husband, is such a great asset, a qualified, chaste wife. She assists the husband in the execution of his religious duties. And that's such a great asset for the husband. So great of an asset. The Vedas enjoin, Prabhupada says, that the wife is to be considered like that. So when it comes to this idea of protection, it's like protecting something that you highly value. Let's say within a family, there's some heirlooms, some priceless gold and ornaments and whatever it is. And so it's passed on generation to generation, and it's valued something. And so you place those valuables in a protected place because you value it so much. And similarly, the protection of a woman is not just there's some, you know, brutish people out there and they could do some harmful thing, but it's more on the positive side, valuing what a qualified, chaste, faithful wife represents, the better half of the language of the Bhagavatam is the better half of the body of the husband. Although there's two bodies, the better half of the body of the husband, because of the great and valuable asset and resource she represents in that husband-wife combination. So the better half idea is just, it's gone. The real meaning is gone. Or another example, something that drives me nuts, is we have so many in America, we have so many festival occasions, or let's say, from my experience in New York City, they have these street fairs. You know, St. Jerome's Street Fair, St. Jerome's Festival, and St. this one, and St. that one, and St. Patrick's, and St. this one, and St. that one. And what has it become? It's become an excuse for people to just go nuts, drinking, wild, browsing, partying, bashing. The police have to come out and just keep people from hurting each other. And same thing, you know, in India, you know, Durga Puja, look out, you know, head for cover. People are wild and zooming around and drunk all over the place and fights and yelling and Durga Puja, Navaratri. I mean, it's not always so totally degraded, but it's become quite like that. When we have our Gaur Purnima festival in Mayapur, they have to hire 5 different categories of security just to protect the people that come for the holy pilgrimage from pickpockets and thieves. Because they're professional thieves, that's what they do. They come to these programs and, you know, they know exactly how to steal people's money, and they have a festival of stealing money. And so on, and so on, and so on. So, sorry about that, but it's just, you know, it's one of those things that the real purpose behind, the spiritual purpose behind things, as Kali Yuga progresses, it just gets lost. And so the message of the pure scripture must be there. How a woman should behave in the absence of her husband. Those are cultural points. And the cultural point isn't the essence. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also expressed this. That's external, go further. That's external, go further. What's the essence? The essence is attachment to the personality of Godhead. And when one is attached to the personality of Godhead, those cultural manifestations will naturally be there. The shyness of the queens. They weren't just behaving because this is social da-da-da-da-da-da. They didn't have any interest in decorating themselves, going anywhere, and doing anything because of their attachment to Krishna. In Krishna's absence, there's no purpose to do any of this. But now Krishna is returning. So for a long time, their absorption in the personality of Godhead inwardly as their husband, with their using the way that Prabhupada is saying it, their seats and their meditations. Uttastur arat sahasanayashayat. They were seated or they were engaged in meditations. They were, their consciousness went inward. But now Krishna has come. And so Vilokya, seeing him, first they heard he was coming, and now he's entering into the palace, they're seeing him. And they're having this festival in their mind. Krishna's come back. Sanjata Mano Mahotsavaha Vilokya Sanjata Mano Mahotsavaha. Just seeing him, their mind is jubilating, celebrating, joyful, overbounding with happiness. Big, big festival. But they have this ladylike reserve. And so they're controlling their emotions in terms of external behaviors. But as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur is saying, that shyness, which is such a nice quality of a woman, it's all it's doing is serving like a pressure cooker. It's just like increasing, 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 increasing their desire. But it's not just being spent, it's increasing, increasing. Their jubilation is increasing. And at a certain point, it crosses the threshold. They just want to run and embrace their husband. But instead, they shyly cover their face and coyly look about. But it's not the coyness of a woman who's, let me capture the man. It's the self-restraint of such a highly spiritually qualified person. We're going to hear what comes next is, to express their heart, they send their sons. And their sons run and embrace Krishna. And as Krishna is embracing the sons, they are feeling the satisfaction of this Krishna was embracing them. But it's done in such a subtle way, in a socially beautiful way. Their hearts are as satisfied as if being embraced by Krishna directly, by having Krishna embrace their sons. How can you train somebody in such etiquette? I mean, you know, it's people are so uncultured in our present atmosphere, and try to cultivate Krishna consciousness in this uncultured atmosphere, it's really a challenge. So hearing the messages of the Bhagavatam help us to get, like this example we were giving yesterday, like there's the tree, and in between this branch and that branch, way off in the distance, there's the moon. We can just get some inclination, some indirect indication. This is the quality of loving exchange that exists when pure love of God has awakened in the heart. And we can't imitate like that. We can't, you know, cosmetically put on those behaviors. But we can deeply appreciate the quality of the exchange of loving dealings between Krishna and his devotees. So previously Krishna saw, he entered into the palace of his father and saw his mother's. And now he's expanded himself into the realm of his own palaces and his own queens and their sons. And it's a festival of exchange. Now, something that Prabhupada dedicates a fair amount of the purport to is explaining that, on the one hand, this is not exaggeration. This is the Lord's infinite potency. And the other side is recognizing his infinite potency. We should never consider him to be like an ordinary being. An ordinary being can't do this. Can't. Even the best of mystic yogis, Prabhupada doesn't mention it here, but elsewhere he says, even when Sobari Muni was able to expand himself in multiple forms, but each of the forms became proportionately less strong, more weak, and weaker, and weaker. So it's just, and then each one of those, like a mirror image, each one of those expansions can only do what the original form is doing, but in a weaker manifestation, subtler. So if the left arm moves, left arm moves, like that. But Krishna's expansions are equally all potent, and he can simultaneously do different things. In his Lalita Madhava, Rupa Goswami describes Narada's visit to Dwarka. And when Narada visits Dwarka, he is amazed. Not only to see that Krishna is simultaneously in different palaces, but he's even got different times of the day going on at the same time. In one place, Krishna's just getting up in the morning, and he meditates upon himself, and the queen is making arrangements for Krishna's next activity. In another place, it's the afternoon, and Krishna's sitting with the minstrels who are singing and playing songs and enjoying. Sometimes Krishna's sitting in the assembly hall. Sometimes Krishna's at the end of night and he's playing with his children. Different activities simultaneously. He's completely, his internal potency, Rupa Goswami is explaining, is completely elastic. He can do whatever he likes at any time he likes in as many different ways as he likes. And he likes. He's the best of all enjoyers. He's great at enjoying. Anything we do is just an imitation of what Krishna does. Simultaneously. There's nobody like Krishna. And that's a big part of what Prabhupada wants us to understand. His potencies are unlimited and inexhaustible. And so there's no question of exaggeration of anything that Krishna does. It's just wonderful. So that, and that's how a devotee internalizes these glorifications of Krishna. It's not like, let me figure it out, how does he do it? It's out of the question. When we were visiting in Puri and in Mayapur and describing Lord Chaitanya's glories, the way to approach the glories of Lord Chaitanya or the glories of Krishna is not to try to understand them, but to appreciate them. How wonderful is Krishna? How wonderful is Krishna? Prabhupada once taught us like this. I remember very early in the movement, someone asked Prabhupada, is it okay to enjoy something beautiful within nature? How should we respond when we see a beautiful sunset, or a beautiful nature scene, or a very beautiful and fragrant rose? Prabhupada's reply is, we're not impersonalists. We recognize the beauty and splendor and awesome wonderfulness of Krishna, and our thinking says, how wonderful is my Krishna? So the appreciation goes, it amplifies, but it goes to Krishna. How wonderful is my Krishna? And so that's just his external energies, the material creation. What to speak of his internal potencies, his own expansions of the goddesses of fortune by his internal potency, and he enjoys with his internal potency in very, very wonderful ways. How wonderful is Krishna? And a devotee then derives great happiness. Tushanti cha ramanti cha katiyantascha mam nityam. The devotee never tires of hearing and describing the glories of Krishna. And it's not a matter of figuring out, hey, what's happening here? How did Krishna do that one? He's manifesting his unlimited and inconceivable potencies as the best of all enjoyers. And the glorification also goes to those who are in that very intimate relation with Krishna. How beautifully, how delicately and sweetly they manifest their love for Krishna. They're not all over the place. They're very refined and pure in their exhibition of their loving attraction for Krishna. This is their qualification. So you go down a step from that, and once again you get, you know, codes of conduct, kind of like training wheels, ways that to help us understand it's that away, not that away. We go in that direction. We follow, not imitate, but we follow the conduct of perfected souls, and we take shelter of them and their mercy so that we can fulfill our duties in life with some semblance of the life of pure devotion. But our main attention doesn't go just to those social nuances. Our main attention goes to Krishna. And that's the other point that Prabhupada emphasizes. Such personalities as the queens, they cannot but think of Krishna. And so they were engaged in ways of thinking of Krishna. And then when Krishna came, they gave up those ways of thinking of Krishna and exhibited very, very sublimely and beautifully the more active way of thinking of Krishna in the form of reciprocating in exchanges of love with him. Perfectly. I'll just read one more time Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's description of the regular psychological reaction on this occasion. First of all, rising from their seats, although they wanted to see their husband, they were deterred because of feminine shyness. But due to strong ecstasy, they overcame that stage of weakness and became caught up with the idea of embracing the Lord. And this thought factually made them unconscious of their surrounding environment. This prime state of ecstasy annihilated all other formalities and social conventions, and thus they escaped all stumbling blocks in the path of meeting the Lord. And that is the perfect stage of meeting the Lord of the soul, Sri Krishna. So they fulfilled that desire to embrace the Lord by sending their sons to embrace the Lord and be embraced by him, which they felt equal to themselves being embraced. Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Questions? Chakri.
I thought of a point when I heard that you read again that point about the Krishna Chakravarti red robe. So I thought of a point I wanted to mention. You're saying how they forgot their outer circumstances.
Yeah.
So I was thinking, like, so a person might have some outer circumstances, he may not exactly, like, they forget them, but they know that that's the goal, in a sense, be a lucrative sense, like they were. So I was thinking how, or remembering one verse that Narada Muni was saying about how that even if you take Krishna consciousness in a sentimental way, what loss is there, whereas the person performs their ordinary duties perfectly, there's no gain.
Unless there's attachment to Krishna that comes from that.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of thinking how sometimes when we have our responsibilities, knowing that even if we take the Krishna consciousness in a sentimental way, still there's no loss, so should we make that leap in a way, or?
Yeah. Prabhupada invited it. Now, that doesn't mean we stop there, or, you know, the thoughtful acharya says, hey, then you don't need to go any further than that, so that's good, you know, just do that. Rather, the mindfulness is of those who make that leap forward, let us see how to refine them further and truly deepen their attachment to Krishna. But if it's... I remember one lecture when Prabhupada was speaking on this point. There were about 50-60 people in the room. Prabhupada was looking around while he was speaking and saying, anyone can engage in service to Krishna. Someone may do so sentimentally, come for some time and then go away. That, you know, what was registering as I was hearing Prabhupada was seeing that. He was seeing. There's 50-60 people here today, and tomorrow it's, you know, a handful. And that's okay. There's no loss, because whatever devotional service is done, that's to the eternal spiritual credit. So that's a very liberal perspective on engaging persons in devotional service. Then Prabhupada said, but initiation is for those who are serious. Then he was very liberal with that too. He said, for 6 months minimum, they must chant 16 rounds, follow the regular principles, thus demonstrating their seriousness, in other words, then they may be initiated. But his perspective very clearly was the eternal benefit of others will be had by simply engaging them in some service to Krishna. Some type of service. So he encouraged. Anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanandi.